All right, so to start off our night, we're going to have a reading from Luke chapter 4, verse 16 to 30.
Well, thanks very much, Darcy and Sean, and thank you everyone for having me for a Bible class. It is an honour. So tonight, as Darcy said, we're going to be talking about those who were healed by Jesus. And when Barge came to me at the start of this year and asked me to do a Bible class, he said, so our theme for this year is these who died in faith. He said, just pick any character and do a character study on them. And I was like, well, there's a lot of characters in the Bible. Couldn't whittle it down to one, so I decided to pick pretty much all of them, including everyone who's sitting here tonight. And I hope that throughout tonight we'll be able to explore what a powerful message that this theme has. As I've gone through this study, I've seen the amazing message of the gospel portrayed in kind of this one concept, which we'll hopefully be able to see tonight. And as much as we're not going to be able to go through every healing, we're only going through about three case studies, we're going to see the great impact that these have on people. I think we often can glaze over these as like, you know, there was so many that happened. But when we really think about it, it really was miraculous. It was truly incredible, and I hope to open that up to everyone tonight. All right, so in the context of healing, to be healed, we need to define a few things. Number one, what is healing? So, when I went to Strong's, as all good Bible studies start, and got this word heal, which translates to cure or to make whole. And this naturally led me to the next question of, well, if you are being cured or made whole, you must have an illness. So let's think about illness. To be healed, we must have an ailment or sickness, and you need a cure. And when we think about the miracles which Jesus performed, it's really incredible because in terms of a human context, there was no cure, and we'll see that throughout each one. And that's really the giant driving factor behind this amazing message is that these were all incurable illnesses, and we'll see ourselves in this as we go through the night. The next big question, and this is really where it started for me, was in Luke 4. I was reading through it to start with, and I thought, why did Jesus actually heal people? And I think this is where we start to see a powerful message come out. I actually might open it up to the floor here. What do we think? Why did Jesus choose to heal people throughout his ministry?
His teachings were right.
Mm-hmm. To show he had power and authority, and therefore his teaching was correct. Mm-hmm. Yep.
As an example.
Yeah.
His teaching was about how you interact and care for other people. So he was giving an example of
to fulfill prophecies.
Yep.
On that point, the one I think it's pretty amazing is actually Matthew 8, where verse 16 it says that he was casting out those with spirits and healed all who were sick, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses, which raises some questions which I won't talk about, but Isaiah in our Bibles doesn't quite say the same thing, but clearly that's what it means, that he was, part of his mission was to bear our sickness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where it fundamentally boils down to as the key reason is it's kind of, and we'll get to this in a second, but a real life example of him bearing our sicknesses it makes it easier to understand for people if he is healing these human illnesses, if we like. So thank you very much for all that. I had three key ones which I
came across. And actually, as we were just singing our opening song, I did think of compassion as well. And compassion was a huge one for Jesus. His whole ministry on earth was looking to help people. So that's a little bonus one. Number one, I think that Jesus healed people as a foreshadowing of the kingdom. And as Steve touched on, this kind of stems from Isaiah. So if we read, I'll just read out Isaiah 61 and verses 1 to 2. It says, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn." And in our reading that we took just before in Luke 4, these are the verses that Jesus is quoting. He speaks between verses 18 and 19. That's where he is citing from. So we see this kingdom vision of freedom for the captives, release from darkness for the prisoners, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. He is doing this. He is healing people to show that one day we'll all be healed and we'll all be brought together in the kingdom. And again, in Isaiah 29, verse 18 and 19, it says, "In that day the deaf will hear the words of the scroll, and out of gloom and darkness the eyes of the blind will see. Once more the humble rejoice in the Lord. The needy will rejoice in the Holy One of Israel." And Jesus actually again quotes this in Luke 7, verses 22 and 23. And he announces that he is the one that's going to be fulfilling the law and these prophecies. Reason number two, I think this is a big one, is that in so many of the healings that Jesus performed, and we'll see a couple of these tonight, there's some really key lessons to those who were actually around him in terms of, particularly with the Pharisees. If we think of times that he deliberately healed on the Sabbath, this was obviously very controversial, but he was trying to drive lessons through this. He was constantly trying to remind particularly the Pharisees, but also just anyone who was, I guess, a bit arrogant, that they're not saved due to status or race as a chosen people, but they would be saved as a result of their willingness to receive, their humility, and their openness to him. We'll see that Jesus was constantly challenging their fundamental beliefs. So again, the Sabbath day, we'll see that throughout our study tonight. And also this fact that Christ came to call everyone. So we know that illness back in those days was typically linked to sin, whether that was a sin committed by the person who was sick or by the person's parents. You were looked on as a sinner or an outcast if you were sick. Yet these are the people that Jesus sought out. In Mark 2, verse 17, Jesus says, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And this was quite an outrage for the Pharisees in particular. We see this throughout Luke 4, verse 24 to 30 that we read tonight as well. And we'll touch on that just quickly. I think this was obviously a big problem. And we see that in Luke 4, where between verses 22, sorry, I'm just a bit, Bible's all over the place here. So Luke 22, he's just quoted this verse from Isaiah and says, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." And we see, "All spoke well of him and marveled at the gracious words that were coming from his mouth." And then throughout verses 23 to 27, he sort of talks about this idea of, he talks about not everyone has been called in a way, or he hasn't come to heal everyone. As much as he would like to, he knew that there was not going to be a willingness in everyone. So he quotes, he looks at two examples, the widow in Elijah's day and Naaman, the Syrian. We think of those two examples and we see a humble and contrite spirit in both. The widow had nothing to give Elijah but what was left for her and her son, the last meal before they died, yet she had faith. And Naaman, who was humbled by washing in the Jordan, he believed, he took action, and that was why he was healed. It wasn't because he was a chosen person, it was because he chose to obey. This is a key lesson that Christ shows throughout. And I think this points forwards to a big lesson that Jesus taught throughout his life. And we see it in Matthew 5, verse 17, that he came to fulfill the law, or like Paul says in Romans 10, verse 4, he was the culmination of the law. It's the trigger, the start of a transition from the law of old to this law of grace. And this leads into the final reason that I've come across. So as I mentioned, Christ's teaching was radical in so many ways, particularly in the context of forgiveness of sins, something that which was completely impossible for a person without God. There are times throughout his ministry, one of which we'll touch on later, that the Pharisees are absolutely appalled at the fact that Christ says, "Your sins are forgiven." Yet this was exactly what Christ was hoping to portray through healings. That through what he would achieve in his death later in his life, we would all be set free from the ailments of the old man, and we would be made new or made whole. Again, this word healed means to be made whole. And interestingly, as we've touched on, many of these healings, if not all, were of people with a chronic or a terminal illness. And I think this shows two key things. So as I mentioned before, this was kind of a tangible way. It's a very difficult concept for us to grapple, I guess, even today, let alone back then when they didn't have the full context of the New Testament, that we could be made whole through Jesus' sacrifice. Just like Christ could heal the incurable and restore them, so he could forgive the people's sins and heal them spiritually in us today. And also in Luke 4, verse 18 to 23, I'm just going to reread verses 23. And he said to them, "Doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, 'Physician, heal yourself. What we have heard you did at Capernaum, do here in your hometown as well.'" So in Luke 4, I guess this is really the introduction to his ministry in many ways. And he says here, "You will quote me to me this proverb, 'Physician, heal yourself.'" And this really points forward to on the cross when he was he willingly sacrificed himself. People were mocking him. "You saved so many other people, yet you can't save yourself." The healing of incurable illnesses clearly showed that he had supernatural powers beyond that of a typical human, and clearly showed that God was truly with him. With this in mind, we go to Luke 23, verse 35 to 36, where it says, "The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, 'He saved others, let him save himself, if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one.'" So just as Christ prophesied here, the people quote him and say, "That which you did in Capernaum, the miracles, the healings, you can't even do to yourself." So clearly Christ had the ability to and the power to save himself like he did so many others, but he willingly chose not to. Without healing and demonstrating his power and authority on the cross, he looked just like a criminal, dying on a cross just like any other day. Yet in saving so many others throughout his ministry, he clearly demonstrated that this was a sacrifice, and he gave this tangible example of some lessons which we'll go through tonight. So with that as an introduction, we're going to go through and look at three case studies, three and a half really. There's a few little bonus ones in there. And throughout this section, there's some really key similarities between them. There is obviously an illness or an ailment which somebody had. there was an act of faith which led to Jesus choosing to heal them. And then in the examples we'll consider tonight, there was a response. That's why I've picked these examples, is because there is a clear response, and that really helps us to connect with these examples. So if you'll come with me over to Luke chapter 4, verse 38 to 41. You shouldn't have to turn too far, hopefully. I might get someone to read those out. So Luke 4, verse 38 to 41. Josh, you're looking like you want to read.
Now he arose from the synagogue and entered Simon's house. Simon's wife's mother was sick with a high fever, and they made requests of him concerning her. So he stood over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her. And immediately she arose and served him. When the sun was setting, all those who had any that were sick with various diseases brought them to him, and he laid his hands on every one of them and healed them. And demons also came out of many, crying out and saying, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." And he, rebuking them, did not allow them to speak, for they knew that he was the Christ.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh. All right. Just so you know, the parallel record is Mark 1, verse 29 to 34, if you have any interest in flicking over there. So, case study number one, we have this illness, which is described as a fever, or in the ESV, a high fever. And when we consider fever in the context of the Bible, I went through and had a quick look, and really the only mention of why it comes about is seen in Deuteronomy. Let me find it. Is Deuteronomy 28, verse 15 to 22, and Leviticus 26, verse 16. So we might quickly flick over to Deuteronomy 28. So Deuteronomy 28, in verse 15, we see that we read, "But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord your God, or be careful to do all his commandments and his statutes that I command you today, then all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you." And so then all of these curses are listed out, and we see down in 22, "The Lord will strike you with wasting disease and with fever, inflammation and fiery heat." And then again in Leviticus 26, verse 16, I won't make you turn there, I'll just read it. It says, again, it's, "But if you will not listen to me and will not do all these commandments, then I will do this to you. I will visit you with panic, with wasting disease and fever that consume the eyes and make the heart ache." So this fever is directly linked to disobedience. If you disobey God, I will strike you with this fever. And obviously, in the context of the New Testament, this is not the case. It's simply linking it to the Old Testament and seeing that there is this link between fever and disobedience or sin. We also see, for a bit of context, that this healing was done in Capernaum. So this is a Jewish town. And the significance of this we'll see in a bit. So we see in this link back to Deuteronomy and the Old Testament, if we see ourselves in this, that as sinners we have disobeyed God, we deserve death. That is our curse for disobedience, just as this fever was a curse for the Israelites in Deuteronomy. And now when we consider the healing, the interesting thing here is that the appeal comes from Simon's family. It says, Simon's mother-in-law was ill with a high fever, and they appealed to him on her behalf. And this instantly took me to James 5, verse 16, which talks about the prayer of a faithful friend. It says, "The prayer of faith will save the one who is sick." It's actually verse 15, sorry. "And the Lord will raise him up, and if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven." So we see here the faithful appeal of a friend is what brings Jesus to healing Simon's mother-in-law. It's similar to the appeal of the friends who lowered the lame man through the roof. They went out of their way to believe that Christ could heal them, and they went to all this effort of bringing him to Jesus to be healed. And it's just a really encouraging thought that as a family here at Hyde Park, we have each other's backs, and we can pray on behalf of people. We can help everyone come to the table to be healed. Table is probably the wrong word, but you get what I'm saying. Oh, actually, this was a lesson to the Pharisees that we see. In Luke 5, verse 17 to 26, that's the healing of the lame man. We see, and when he saw their faith, he said, "Man, your sins are forgiven you." And this is one of those little lessons that I was saying, just a side point, a lesson to the Pharisees about that Jesus did have the ability to forgive sins. This really upset the Pharisees and I guess cemented in many other people's minds this idea that Jesus had the power to transform, but also cements in our minds the unwillingness for them to change. And that's, I guess, a big factor in why they're not necessarily the enemy, but they're obviously considered very stubborn and unwilling to be transformed to Jesus' new law. So then back in Luke 4 and verse 39, we see that Simon, his mother-in-law, immediately she rose and began to serve them. And I think this is a really powerful lesson in our response, that we, like Simon's mother-in-law, have been saved from this curse of disobedience. We've been brought out of this this doom. And it's now on us to respond. And one of these responses is service. We see the impact of her service as well. We see that Jesus was able to heal many, many others who were sick. In verse 40, "Now when the sun was setting, all those who had any who were sick with various diseases brought them to him, and he healed them." So it was because of Simon Peter's mother-in-law, her response, that Jesus was able to welcome people in and able to heal. So a really encouraging lesson. Just a link on this to other people who served as a response to their healing. Let's jump quickly over to Luke 8, verse 1 to 3, it's on the screen. And we read there, "Soon afterward he went on through cities and villages, proclaiming and bringing the good news of the kingdom of God, and the 12 were with him, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities, Mary called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's household manager, and Susanna, and many others, who provided for them out of their means." So that's providing for Jesus and his disciples out of their own pockets. And this is a great example of service. So this is two lots of women. So Simon Peter's mother-in-law who was healed, and then these other women who had been following Jesus. And obviously this service is not a woman's job. It's just that back in the day, this was typically considered their role, I guess. And it's a really, I think, powerful example that even though we might not be someone who's a great leader or preacher, we might not be confident, but we can assist others in the way that they serve through our service to each other. So, case study one, we have two key takeaways. Number one, you have been healed just as the mother-in-law had been healed. No matter what your capability or mental capacity, you can serve. And then key takeaway number two, The faith of others can be a massive factor in our healing. And I think this is particularly shown through the example of the lame man who was let through the roof. Whilst it was the act of him himself having faith to get up and walk, it was also the faith and encouragement of his friends to persist and to have that belief that Jesus would be able to heal him, that all this effort of bringing him up on the roof, letting him down, would be worth it. Their compassion drove them to go, drove him to go the extra mile and do good for their friend. Awesome. So on to case study number 2. And this is over in Luke 17 and verses 11 to 19. So we have 10 lepers. It says, on the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance. Okay, so here we have the illness, which was leprosy. And throughout the Bible, I think this leprosy shows a graphic display of the destructive power of sin. It takes over the whole body. There'll be a table up in a few in a slide's time that will explain this better. In Leviticus 13, sorry, that is a little bit small. I always forget that me staring this far away from the screen is a lot bigger. Leviticus 13 is the laws regarding leprosy. And it's quite detailed about how to control it because of its highly destructive and contagious nature. The clear message throughout Leviticus 13, we won't go into it, is that it causes a divide. It separates the person who is sick from the rest of the community. Completely changes your lifestyle and it isolates you from the city, the main congregation. And when we consider ourselves in this, we are in the same position due to our sin. We have been separated from God. In Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 13, it says, your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. This is saying that God cannot be in the presence of sin. We cannot directly interact because of our sinful nature and our bad choices. So I probably won't run through that whole thing, but we can see this comparison of leprosy and sin and its destructive nature. So we see leprosy, it starts small, it spreads through the whole body, just as sin, it starts in small things in our life, and if we don't deal with it, it keeps on creeping and creeping into more and more. It causes numbness and insensitivity, and just as sin does, it dulls the conscience, it burns the nerve endings. Makes a person unclean. As I said, Leviticus 13, they are very much declared unclean, just as we are made spiritually unclean through sin. And you can see a bunch more great comparisons there. And it's clear that this idea of leprosy as an illness represents our sinful nature. So the healing of these 10 lepers. One thing that is interesting to note quickly is that we see that these lepers are actually outside of the camp in Luke 17. It says, and as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance. So you can actually see that they're being very respectful of the laws. They are staying a distance, they're staying outside the village, they are following the laws outlined in Leviticus 13. And we see that Jesus tells them, they call out to Jesus, they appeal for him to save them. And when he saw them, he said to them in verse 14, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. Now, you might read over that and not see a great deal of faith there, but if we think about it, these are unclean people, both spiritually and also, I guess, physically, If anyone came near them, it could be contagious. Other people could be infected. So this is a big deal, just strolling into to meet the priest. This is, you could be in a lot of trouble. If you weren't going to be healed, who knows the punishment you would receive for just wandering in with leprosy. I guess if we think about COVID, I mean, that was a similar idea. There was strict rules as to where you could go, where you couldn't go, what you could do and what you couldn't. And so I guess in that sense, it's like in complete lockdown, one of us walking outside with without a mask, going into, you know, a supermarket without a mask and openly disregarding the laws that everyone else was obeying. So it was quite the act of faith to actually walk in to go and see the priest. And we see that as they were on their way, they were healed. Another example of the... I'm a bit behind on my slides. Okay. Back into Leviticus and chapter 14, verses 8 to 9. I'll just read those out. So this is about the purification of someone who was leprous and is now healed. There was this strict process that they went through with the priest to be declared clean again. And again, I'll have a table which will explain this slightly better in a second. It says, "And he who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off all his hair and bathe himself in water, and he shall be clean. And after that he may come into the camp, but live outside his tent 7 days. All right. It's pretty cool here to see this idea of washing in water, and we obviously can link that to baptism. This healing process being made clean by washing. And then further down the line, there is a guilt offering to cleanse them. That's between Leviticus 14, 10 to 31. And we can obviously link that to the sacrifice of Jesus, who sacrificed his life to declare us clean. And again, this is that, I guess, more tangible way of thinking about it, that someone who once was declared unclean, incurable by man, could be declared clean again through Christ's miracle. If we jump over to Mark 1 and verse 40 to 44 quickly, this is another record of a leper being healed. Different instance. And I'll just read verses 40 to 42. "And a leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling, said to him, 'If you will, you can make me clean.' And moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, 'I will, be clean.' And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean." So another interesting parallel to our healing process, that this man, again, being unclean, approached Jesus and actually, and Jesus was within touching distance. So clearly this man must have come quite close. And I guess when we think about this in the context of our lives, this is the great gift that we've been given, that through Jesus we can now approach and we can now actually contact God through that the connection that Jesus made through his death, just as this leper did. And again, that's the same with the 10 lepers. Through Christ, they could be reconciled with God and they could go and visit the priest and be declared clean again. So just another quick table. In the interest of time, we might just, if you would like to take a photo of it, be my guest. Otherwise, I can send it through later. But it's quite cool to see this process of healing described in Leviticus 14 quite well paralleled with baptism and the healing of our uncleanness due to our sin. Sorry, was anyone after that still? We're all good. Okay, so the response to the healing of the 10 lepers. One thing that I did notice is that there was 10 lepers and only one returned to be glorified. And I think there's a couple of lessons here. Actually, just one, not a couple. If we think about 1 in 10, that is a tithe. And a tithe, this, I will put a disclaimer out there. This is me just thinking. I don't think there's any necessarily great proof that this was significant. But if we think about it, a tithe was designed to give back to God. So a tenth of your earnings or a tenth of your wealth were to be given to the running of the tabernacle or the temple. So in a way, this leper was the tithe. He was one faithful servant from the 10 who asked for help and the 10 who were redeemed. And we see that his response was, he with a loud voice glorified God. He gave back to God through praise and honoring that it was God who had healed him. So just a quick, interesting little aside that, again, I'm not sure if it's really too... I don't know what the word is, but I think it's cool. We are just going to skip past this. But there's another example of a man who glorified God after he was healed. So that lame man who went walking and leaping and praising. Awesome. Key takeaway for case study number 2. Without the sacrifice of Christ, we remain isolated from God. We remain outside of the camp as the lepers did. However, through what Christ did for us, we've been reconciled to God. And we see that in Romans 5, verse 10. Probably is worth reading that out quickly. Romans 5, verse 10 says, "For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by his life." So our response to this should be to give thanks. Never stop giving thanks to God for the gift that we've been given. Never take it for granted, because without this, we are hopeless. All right, and now over to John 9 for our final case study, where a blind man was healed. So we read in John 9. "As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' Jesus answered, 'It was not this man's sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him.' We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world.' Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, 'Go wash in the pool of Siloam.' So he went and washed and came back seeing." So that is the illness and the healing. The illness was obviously blindness. We can see that this left him only able to beg for a living. He was on the roadside. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And when we think of what blindness represents, it's often used to represent ignorance or disobedience. In Matthew 6, verse 22, we read that the eyes are the lamp of the body. So without eyes, without vision, we have no light to follow. We have no discernment between right and wrong. I'm sure there was another verse that was really good for that as well, but I haven't got it written down, sorry. But anyway, blind means you cannot see the right or the wrong way. Once you can see... Oh, it was here. Excuse me. John 9, verse 39 to 41 reads, "Jesus said, 'For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind.' Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, 'What, are we blind too?' Jesus said, 'If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains.'" So we see this. If we are blind, we wouldn't be guilty of sin because we have no discernment between what is right and wrong. But once we can see, our guilt remains. If we then have a choice between obeying and disobedience. If we consider this in the context of this example, this blind man had no vision, and as a result, he was left simply begging on the side of the road. He had no choice to actually do right or do wrong. He was left without a vision or without a hope. Now, the healing, we see that this man it's actually a different example that runs through that. But we see that he had no idea of who Jesus was. He couldn't see Jesus, but he had heard of him. He had faith enough to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. He had faith enough to let a random man spit on the ground, make mud, and cover his eyes in it. So he had clearly heard of him. He was clinging on to hope, which he believed could save him. And that's a really good lesson for us. The whole use of saliva or spit, I don't have any concrete ideas of why this was used. There's a few ideas here that I have written down here. I read online that this was again another one of those lessons to the Pharisees. Spitting and making mud on the Sabbath is considered, I guess, work. And this is against the traditional Sabbath law. He is trying to again show that he was the Lord of the Sabbath. Again, trying to show that the people that true discipleship doesn't focus on tradition or needless rules, but focuses on the intention, the heart. There's some other examples of Jesus using saliva. So in Mark 7, verse 31 to 34, he heals a deaf and mute man. And in Mark 8, there's another blind man that he heals using saliva. So interestingly, there is a correlation between these where there's the restoration of a sense. I'd be interested if anyone has any ideas on that in chatting about it afterwards. Another interesting thing about saliva is that it's the same word used here as was used when Jesus was being spat on in disgrace as he was walking to the cross. Just an interesting connection. And if we jump down to the response, this is where this case really stands out for me. We're not obviously going to read through the rest of John 9. It would take quite a while. But we see throughout that there is quite the interrogation process that this man goes through. He's healed. And if we read in verse 8, the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he is like him." And he kept saying, the man who had been healed, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" And he answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." So straight away, he has been healed, and immediately he stands up for what this man has done, this unknown Jesus had done to him. And there's a bunch of other interrogations through there. There's a second and a third interrogation, which are by the Pharisees. They then call in his parents, who are asked questions. And interestingly, in verse, that's worth touching on, verses 18 to 23, the Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" And his parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But how he now sees we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he is of age, he will speak for himself." And in verse 22, his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. So we see there's some fairly high stakes for supporting and standing up for Jesus here. And again, the blind man sticks up for Jesus and what he did for him in verse 24. And if we quickly read through verse 25 particularly, this is after he'd been asked a lot and a lot of questions. He answered, this is in relation to the question, was Jesus a sinner? They say, give glory to God, we know that this man is a sinner. And he answers, whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. And I think this is a really powerful lesson for us, that we clearly see that we have been healed. We see that we've been changed, and we know what Jesus and God have done for us. So the very least that we could do is we could stand up to those who might not believe us out in the world. At least bear witness to the amazing things that have been done for us. And then, just quickly in verse 27, he answered them, I have told you already and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? And they reviled him, saying, you are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. So on top of standing up for Jesus and standing up for the amazing things that he did, he also becomes a disciple and begins to follow Christ. If we consider a few bonus characters because I'm already pushing the time limit. There's Bartimaeus, another blind man who immediately chose to follow Jesus. And then quite a powerful example, Saul converted to Paul in Acts 9. And that's someone who completely flipped his life around, and his immediate response was to stand up for what happened to him. I have been healed, and now I'm going to stick up for that and spread the word. So our final lot of key takeaways for case study 3. Number one, find your vision. And this is really important because, as I said before, if we are blind, we cannot see where we're going. We cannot discern between what is right and wrong. And now that we have been given vision, we have been given this gift, but also a responsibility to choose between good and bad, recognize that and be responsible. Be responsible for your actions. God has saved us, and we need to be a witness to this miracle. Again, this doesn't require any amazing preaching efforts or anything. This simply requires you standing up. I have been healed. It's an amazing gift. Let me share it with you. And again, recognize that we are ill. Recognize that we have an ailment and commit to a new healed life. So if we think about this linking to the theme of this year, these who died in faith. So each of these case studies included a faith response and a choice to action. When we think about it, I guess in terms of us, we can see ourselves in this. We who died in faith, we have put to death our old man, this sick, flawed old man. We died in faith, knowing that Jesus and God would be able to raise us a new man, would be able to give us new life. Each of the case studies we went through tonight included an incurable illness, just as we have. And also, Jesus died in faith, knowing that he too would be healed of his human nature. Whilst he never gave into it, he was also tarnished with the same illness as we are. But Christ died in faith, trusting that his work would save all, including himself, and give us this amazing hope. We read in Romans 5, verse 1 to 2, therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand, and we boast in the hope of the glory of God. We see that throughout all of these examples, whilst each one has its nuances and its own key takeaways, They are united by the very simple message which Jesus' ministry proclaimed. I guess the gospel summed up. You have been forgiven, healed, set free from your illness. Now go and make a positive impact on those around you. Glorify God for what he has done for you and serve him in any way you can.